Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. I'm Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug. How are you this afternoon?
Well, I'm good, you know, except that we have this drought down here and we've had like 40 inches of rain in the last week. Oh, yeah. Some people are saying there's a drought. I don't understand it. My pond is filling. But anyway, we're going to talk about the Salvation Army today. Now, the second you say Salvation Army, it warms the cockles of your heart. I mean, it just does, you know, and then you're going to think, oh, when you're told they're a religion, you're going to say, what? No, they're not. They're a paramilitary organization that helps crises. And you're like, oh, really? Can you name one that they've helped? So we're going to talk about them today. And unfortunately, like the research of Michael and the Miners has pointed out, that the YMCA is not exactly what people might think it is. All these crisis groups, I'm going to make reference to a few of them, but crisis groups mean the opposite of what they say they are. And so we're going to find out about the history of the Salvation Army. And when it's all done, the next time you see a red bucket asking for change, you're going to ask them for change. So, Michael, what have you found out about the Salvation Army and its foundation?
You should ask for stock in the company is what you should ask for. They had $2.8 billion in revenue last year. And I don't think it came from the change in the little pots, kettle pots at Christmas time. Okay, Douglas, you got me into this because you and the team, the conclave, asked our researchers to look into Boris Johnson. And boy, that was a hornet's nest, because first we discover he's related to he's the great-great-grandchild of the founder of the YMCA. And then we started looking at the activities of the YMCA, and that went down an entire rabbit hole, which we won't talk about that much today, I would imagine. But then that got us to thinking, what about the Salvation Army? Because that formed in the same 10, 20 year period in the mid 1800s. And I wonder what we will discover. And, okay, I'm not going to go on a sequential rant of what we discovered. Let me just share with you that we were blown away, and none of us believed what we were looking at. And so we've spent the last week and a half or so checking, double-checking, and rechecking the source information to make sure that we were reading this right. And what I can tell you now is a poster emerged. And this poster was published in 1890 by somebody we were quite familiar with. His name was W.T. Stead. And most people will, if they know his name at all, will know that he was Cecil Rhodes' official biographer. And we've also talked about him a lot because he was involved with the foundation of the Pilgrim Society. He was one of the co-organizers of the Imperial Press Conference in 1909. He was a co-founder of the Empire Press Union. He was therefore a co-organizer of CIA MI6, MI5, and GCNCS, which is now GCSQ. And it goes on and on. He was quite a prolific publisher and writer and journalist. And if you look him up today, most journalism historians would call him the father of tabloid journalism, because he was one of the first journalists to start mixing reporting of fact and opinion. And all those are elements of who this man is. We then discovered, as you'll recall, maybe a year ago, in looking at the involvement of Larry Ellison and Oracle in the activities of the Pilgrim Society. And for those who don't know, Oracle is the prime go-to database for all of the big corporate computer systems in the world, essentially. Not all, but most. And we started looking into Larry Ellison's background, and lo and behold, we discovered that his baby daddy, who later became a convicted pedophile, seriously, he had four wives, and was a cult leader. He started the Church of Psychic Sciences in Oakland, California. And then in his biographies, we discovered that he was an early chief of staff for W.T. Stead. Here he comes, pops up again. And in looking into that background, we discovered that W.T. Stead and Larry Ellison's baby daddy were heavy into necromancy, which is talking to the dead and spirit writing and seances and spiritualism. And as it turns out, pedophilia, and they like their choice of mates to be their cult followers. So they especially Larry Ellison's father started a cult called the Church of Psychic Sciences. Okay, so we knew Stead. We didn't consider him to be a Christian at all, and then we stumble across a book that was written by the founder of the Salvation Army. His name was William Booth. There is a propaganda story about him that's widely told all over the world in every website you look at for the Salvation Army. And I can tell you, and I can assure you that that was propaganda. And what we discovered that in 1890, let me say first, another place where we saw Booth and Stead come up together. And that was in Carol Quigley's book, Anglo-American Establishment, where he discloses that in 1890, W.T. Stead was working with Lord Rothschild and Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Milner and J.P. Morgan to develop an organization that was going to guide the British Empire out of its slave business and into a corporatist imperial corporatism business. And in this list, they had something called the Society of the Elect, which is something that I first heard from you. Quigley confirms it. And wouldn't you know, Cecil Rhodes is the president of the Society of the Elect. This was going to be a secret society. And in the Council of Initiates, which is the part of the organizing group, we see the names of William Booth and Bramwell Booth, his son, along with W.T. Stead and Arthur Balfour and John Buchan and others. And these are all names now we've become familiar with. And so here we see, we were shocked, actually, to see the head of the Salvation Army collaborating with Cecil Rhodes, who the next year became a privy councillor, knowing that Rhodes was a ruthless bastard. And I use that word technically correct. And Rhodes was also a very committed homosexual, which is a fact that has to be considered when you look at this in terms of the kinds of people that were attracted to this organization. So we see Booth's name mentioned, and then we see in 1880 that Booth wrote a book and published a book called In Darkest England and the Way Out. And it was promoted in the Review of Reviews, which was W.T. Stead's anthology of he was a monthly periodical that discussed the books of the day. And in looking at this book, Stead promoted the book heavily prior to the publication in late 1890. And then we discover from other writings that Stead was a co-author, a ghostwriter of the book with William Booth. And it praised the Salvation Army. And in the book, we see voluminous pictures of the different leaders of the Salvation Army. And we see a lot of discussion about the alleged vision of the Salvation Army. And specifically, it's clear, Stead used this book and his participation and influence with Booth to kind of change the whole direction of the Salvation Army from what they called salvation priority to a social priority. And in fact, bring up the social priority alongside the salvation of the eternal salvation message with this social salvation message. And clearly we see that Stead was using his influence over the Salvation Army to completely change its approach and its priorities. And it's clear that the Rhodes crowd, the Society of the Elect crowd, wanted to use this book and to use the Salvation Army as some sort of shock troops that could be used to promote their agenda all over the world. And in the process of doing this research, we stumbled across in the Cornell library a poster that was published alongside this book in 1890, and it was an exquisitely designed book or poster, which on one page describes in quite intricate detail the entire priority of not only the book that was published in Booth's name, which now appears to be essentially written by Stead, but it also describes the complete vision of the Pilgrim Society for how the British Empire was going to convert its influence from an agrarian slavery to a white slavery that would be then exported all over the world. And they were going to use the Salvation Army and the YMCA to achieve that objective. And I'm going to stop here because I know I gave you an assignment to read, to study that poster quite a bit. And so you're kind of early reactions to it, I think, will be useful.
Well, William T. Stead was the number one propagandist of his time. He was a person who connected the Cecil Rhodes Inner Society of the Elect with later Alfred Milner's Kindergarten or the Round Table, which then became literally a pervasive group of elitists who were imperialists. And what did they do? They took the ideas of Jeremy Bentham and John Ruskin, and they started the settlement movement. They started the YMCA. They started the Salvation Army. And when you look at the Salvation Army and you go back to the roots of it in the settlement movement, you're going to find that John Ruskin taught all these people.
That's correct.
The one who were the connecting fiber between them. And the Toynbee House, Alfred Toynbee, who was a historian and a very dear friend of John Ruskin's, started the first settlement house. But really, when you try to look up who started the settlement movement, you won't find anybody started it. Why? Because it was a group of rich people, as you have pointed out, Lord Pirbright, Lord Rosebery, N.M. Rothschild, and all these other clowns who were the richest people of the time, Cecil Rhodes. And they said, well, we don't like all these poor people. We don't like all these prostitutes. We don't like these alcoholics. And they were the most prejudiced people for the downtrodden in England. So what did they do? They moved them out to a farm with the Salvation Army. Oh, we'll just move them out to the farm. And in all cases, when you think about the Salvation Army, here's what you're going to find out, that it ain't what it says it is. William Booth was a pawnbroker. He was a pawnbroker. And the Salvation Army thrift shops, it's nothing more than international pawnbroking, basically. People bring their goods there. They donate them philanthropically, hoping that it's going to help the poor. And what do? They make money off of it. So he says he was a one-time Methodist minister. Yeah, try to find that in history. You mean a one-minute Methodist minister? And now, in the entire organization of the Salvation Army, which claims to be a church, how many followers do you think they have in their church? 17,000. There are cults that have more people in them than that. So this is a cult, and it's a cult of the fake attempt to deal with poverty and using people in poverty, alcoholics, prostitutes, and sending them to British settlements. So it's the same thing as the British settlement movement. But in this case, they literally went all over the world. 178 countries now have Salvation Army there. And who were the people they sent? They weren't the paramilitary officers and the supposed ministers, and there's very, very few ministers. If you're one of the officers, you can conduct the church services. All they do is read a sermon that is written for all the Salvation Army churches throughout the world, and good luck trying to find one. I tried to find one here in this metropolitan area. There's one. You can't hardly find a video of it because it isn't religious and there's no one showing up to it. So it's fake. It's like so many of these crisis groups. If you declare there's a crisis and then you ask the philanthropist to give money, they will only give money, like the International Crisis Group, which was started by George Soros and has money from Rockefeller, Rothschilds, Wellcome Trust, Gates Fund. Everybody donates to the National Crisis Group. What do you? And they say they're all about peace. Look closely. They're all about war. They're fomenters of war. So when you hear the Salvation Army or the YMCA say they're trying to help the downtrodden, it's the exact opposite. They're trying to literally turn them into their slaves, turn them into people they can take advantage of. And what happens with those groups? They always get government money too. And pretty soon they become, though they're a 501c3, they're a non-government organization. They're doing the work of the government because the government doesn't want to deal with those people. And what happens to those people? They disappear. And so the same thing is true with the Salvation Army. And I challenge you as the listener to try to find a Salvation Army church to go to. And when you go there, tell me how many people are there. There's going to be, you know, so few that they don't even have a single film of a Salvation Army service any time in history, anywhere, because that's not what they're doing. He was a pawn broker, and he basically got into the settlement movement. And therefore, let's just take Haiti, for example. The Salvation Army was supposed to help Haiti. Untold amounts of millions of dollars went to that. And where did it go? It went nowhere. No one helped Haiti. Salvation Army was there? Nope. Red Cross was there? Nope. Who was there? The International Crisis Group Initiative, the Clinton Foundation. And we know they stole all the money. So this is a scam. It's the same old scam. It comes right out of England, oftentimes London itself, promoted by the same bankers, promoted by the same people trying to use it as a philanthropic group, which in fact, those exact people are the leaders of the largest depopulation groups called eugenicists. And so I think that the further we look into these organizations, if they were created in England, the more you're going to find out they had the same donors, they actually had the same agenda. It's just that they look a little bit different. And in every case, they are thrilled to say that they followed the Jesuit model, a paramilitary organization that works for the Pope that is pre-forgiven for murdering people if it advances the cause of the Catholic Church.
Now, Douglas, you've said that many times. do you know that in theory, or do you know that for a fact?
I know it for a fact. I was involved with the Jesuits, and they don't make the same vows they used to, but they're pretty close. The point is they're called soldiers of God for the Pope, and so they do whatever it takes. Matter of fact, they can go out and study black magic for the Pope. They can study anything for the Pope. There are always experts who are Jesuits who study every evil thing there is on the face of the earth. That's one of their big deals, is to study that which is in conflict with the Catholic Church's supposed ideas. So no, I have a direct experience of this. And my experience with the YMCA, my experience with Salvation Army, there is nothing Christian going on there. I've never seen anything Christian going on in those organizations. Matter of fact, most people would be shocked to find out that the Salvation Army says they have a church. And I tried to find out how many of them are ministers. Well, the lie was that William Booth and all the founding members who were the high generals and the high positions, military positions, were ex-ministers. You mean ex-ministers like William Booth, who was a Methodist minister for 1 minute? No, they're not. It's the exact opposite of what they're saying. And when you want to find the truth about them, plug in their name and the word corruption, and you will be shocked. They can't erase it, a lot of it, from the internet, and you will be busy, more busy reading about their corruption than you will be able to find out the work that they do. And in all cases, they made $2.8 billion in 2020, or was it $3.8 million? Anyway, $2.8 billion, I believe it was. And what do they do with that? They get given a lot of this money, right?
From the U.S. government.
They open things that they charge for. They don't provide free soup. Their phrase was soap, soup, soap, and salvation. Salvation wasn't even added into the name of that organization until much later. So it wasn't a church organization. It was a pawnbroker and his wife who had followed the settlement movement, and they said, well, we can make a killing off of this. And now, unfortunately, like all these groups, once they become institutionalized and they're in every country in the world, they become agents of British imperialism.
Well, the reason I want to focus on that poster, it's an 1890 poster, is because my contemporary experience, I used to do a lot of management consulting and worked a lot with organizations to help them build their vision statements. And there was a group of consultants in Ohio, up in Toledo, that were specialists at building these posters that would, on one page, on one illustration, would show the complete vision of a whole organization, a large multinational organization. And companies would pay millions of dollars, literally, to build these posters. And when I saw this, W.T. Stead creation from 1890, I said, oh my gosh, here is the mother lode. This is the vision for what became the Pilgrim Society. This is the British vision for how they were going to reorganize the empire and to push corporatism as their new model, since their plantation model was drying up because they were losing their slaves. And one of the things we now know is the whole British economy for hundreds of years with the British East India Company was dependent on slavery as a key element of their profitability. And so when they had to give up their slaves in the mid-1800s, that's when we see all these settlement movements. We see the YMCA, the Salvation Army, all develop. And so the question is, what's the connection? And I think we saw from the development of Boris Johnson's great-great-grandfather that the bankers of the day were the ones that were pushing these organizations into being. And so the question was, why? What was their agenda? Because surely it wasn't so they could have better swimming pools. And as we now have concluded that the main purpose of the YMCA was to continue the practice that was developed in the slave trade for beating down the psyches of the male slaves using sodomy and rape. And then we saw this Salvation Army, which was more clear that it was a part of the settlement movement, by the way, which is now the source of what we now know as communism. And we see here in this one illustration how they were going to use the Pilgrims, the Salvation Army people to collect this 3 million dredges of English society. We're going to clean them up in the cities. They were going to push them out into the farm colony, and then they were going to push them overseas in immigration. And there's three places they were going to go. They were either going to go to a British colony, they were going to go to foreign lands like the United States and Canada, other foreign lands, and then the in this poster in 1890, the mecca of this illustration is something called the Colony Across the Sea. It's not identified by a place, but it's got a little sun coming up behind in the background behind this location. Well, in the book that's disassociated from this poster, but we discovered in the archives of the Review of Reviews, this place was defined then as South Africa. Now, this was before the Boer Wars. This was before they created the British South Africa Company, and about the time that De Beers was being created. And so what we see here is that South Africa at that time was going to be the way the British empire would acquire land where they could build their perfect country and get out of the squalor of London. And they actually identified that 10% of London was in this squalor and they needed to get rid of them. They even discussed the idea that their conditions were so bad that they really ought to be poisoned or murdered. That's actually in the book. So you look at this document and you see what they're describing here. And to a corporate organizational guy like me, this is the visual illustration of the mentality of the average British aristocrat in 1890 and beyond. And this pretty much drives their decisions even today, and to the point, except that they've replaced South Africa with America. So now America is going to be the colony across the sea. And if people don't believe that, look at the leadership of Facebook right now. The two leaders of Facebook are Sir Nicholas Clegg and Lord Baron Richard Allen, among others. And these are Brits, folks. And now we see Facebook trying to declare its independence over the United States. That's nothing but the British moving in on us, because they've spent a whole century following the plan of this vision that was set up by their leaders in the late 1890s, and is now coming to fruition now.
Absolutely true. And what you said, you mentioned the Pilgrims. All of these groups are tied together by the Pilgrim Society.
Right.
To this very day, it is not a ambassador's dinner club. It is an insider trading group that tells and creates groups like the International Crisis Group, which was created in 1995 by George Soros, took in money from Rockefeller's Rothschilds, Wellcome Trust, all these things I mentioned.
And by Lord Mark Malik Brown, who was the chairman of SGO Smartmatic. Don't forget that.
I'm sure Jeffrey Patty had everything to do with the propaganda, being the great propagandist that he was, a member also of the Privy Council of the Queen. But you hit it on the head. This is a paramilitary organization that says they're after salvation. But what is the option? First off, salvation from what? Sin. What do they consider sin? Well, they consider LGBT all sins. That's what they're in trouble for right now, because they say no homosexual can be part of their church, no lesbian can be part of their church, and on and on. And so they're getting blasted for that. But then the corruption, that they don't open their books to anybody ever, that they have this organization which supposedly is serving others, but they're really charging them for money. The bottom line is this. On that chart, it says all of the depravities that they consider, which is just about everything that you can imagine that might have the slightest immorality to it, 10,000 prostitutes in London, 100,000 prostitutes in the rest of Britain. They want to put them on a ship, send them to the colonies, a settlement, and they say right on the chart, I love this, it's taken from Amos Comenius's World in Pictures, Orbis Pictus, where they put everything on one page. Right. And then they label it.
It's very well done, by the way.
It has to be true because it's all on one page and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And this one's in color, so it has to be correct. But right there, they say, they're going to send you to these colonies and give you 5 acres and a cow.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever been given 5 acres and a cow by the Salvation Army, period. Never, 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 ever happened. Here's what they
said. That was the price. That was the in the story of Hamilton Brown, Kamala Harris's great-great-grandfather, that was part of the story that he pitched to the Irish who became his slaves, and that was they'd get a cow and 5 acres of land.
And they became indentured servants, indentured farmers, tenant farmers who were worked to death, men, women, and children. He never had to pay off Hamilton Brown, the great-great-great-grandfather of Kamala Harris, who was, when the slaving ended and the British said there'd be no more slaving, they simply turned it into all of these movements we're talking about. And they got so good at it.
Let's be clear. What we're talking about is they converted black and brown slaves to white slaves. And I think this is why we hear so much racism right now, about racism, and it's a political agenda, because they're in fact hiding the fact that late 1800s, they were pushing white slavery. And so they're trying to get the people who, like us, who have suffered from this white slavery, to feel bad about the black slaves who were actually freed long before we were. So we've got a real problem here in this whole history that we have been, that's been shoved down our throats. It's all been propaganda.
Absolutely. And to make it perfectly clear, I'm going to reiterate what you just said a minute ago. When you, the deal is, the Salvation Army is to be an army at war against the indigent populations or the people they consider are committing sins. Now, sins are alcohol, sex, going to boxing matches, you name it. Everything was a sin back in England at that time. And what do they say?
There's a long list in this poster.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Slavery, idiocy, want, prison, beggary, drunkenness, homelessness, unemployment, sweaty, lunatics, sin, they say murder, desertion, brothels. I mean, they've got a whole list here, probably about 40 or 50 different.
And they clearly state in their founding that if you're sinning, it would be better that the Salvation Army, they don't say specifically them, but that someone should kill you to save you from sin. And so they take these people who are sinners, put them all in a boat. Okay, so they put the prostitutes in with the drunkards, with the homelessness. Homelessness is a sin, according to these people. Well, they only got to homelessness because of wars and because of the rich elite making them homeless. So they literally say they are eugenicists with a Christian overtone. They say they're a universal Christian. No, they're not. They don't have any sacraments. They only have a list of things that looks like you'd get it from Alcoholics Anonymous. To say that they're Christian or there's ministers, no, they're not. They are not doing anything that they really actually say that they're doing. So they would rather see those people, every one of those groups of people you mentioned, dead rather than to continue in their sin.
Labor strikes are a sin.
Well, of course they are. Probably wearing your skirt too short is a sin and you should be killed for it. So these are people who literally created a Christian army. Hello, that's what the Jesuits are. They're a Catholic army for the Pope. This is a Christian army that William Booth, this fake minister, a pawnbroker, you know, come on, a pawnbroker, think of that. Was he helping anybody when he was a pawnbroker? No, he took the things that the poor had left to sell. And then when you'd come back to get it, you wouldn't get it, or he'd jack up the price, or you wouldn't be able to pay it off or whatever. Of course, he knew that. He was taking advantage of those people. So this is an opportunist flying under a false flag of Christianity. And this is nothing new. It's been going on for so long. It's ridiculous. It's still going on today. Let's just talk about one person who would have been a recipient of this type of
recipient.
Thank you. Whew. And who would that be? Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes wanted to kill all the Boers in the Transvaal, and he started off with some British East India Company land, and then the South Africa Company started up. And what did they do? He wanted a war, and later on, Alfred Milner went there and conducted that war, and it was one of the most ruthless wars of all times. And who did they want to send there? All of these people.
Well, let me point out here, in this poster, 1890, the idea that South Africa would be the destination point for this colony across the sea was only just germinating, and they had not gotten organized, but we saw very quickly within the few years after that, that all kinds of pronouncements started coming out of Parliament to set up this British South Africa Company. So what we see here is that Stead was running interference for this whole agenda, and that they had to get rid of the Boers. They had to get rid of the blacks in South Africa, the Dutch, the French, the Portuguese. They had to get rid of everybody and clear out the land, because this was going to be their colony across the sea. That's because W.T. Stead's poster said so. And so did, unfortunately, William Booth's book, which I think Stead largely wrote. He just used Booth. And so the whole agenda of the Boer Wars was to carry out this vision that was printed on this poster. It's amazing.
It's yellow German journalism. And it's nascence. It was the beginning of using media and newspapers to get across a lie, to send people as really, let's call them what they are. They are British invaders. They call them now migrants, you know, coming into Britain, which they're getting probably their karma for what they did. But they sent across British settlers. It's kind of like when they sent the prisoners, cleared out the prisoners and sent them to Ogletree and to Georgia. So that's what the British did. Anybody who wasn't fitting into their picture, they would say that the philanthropists, the rich people, put up the money to help these people. In other words, get rid of them. But who was actually benefiting from all of it, from the settlement movement, from all of it? That would be the rich elite who put up the money for propagandists. And who were in the inside group of those Cecil Rhodes group, the Society of the Elect, both the inner and the outer group, the Alfred Milner's Roundtable, the Royal Institute for International Affairs, all of those things enriched private investors, not the British government. In almost all of the cases, they end up getting money from all the governments, but in the beginning, it's an individual who simply profited for themselves. In this case, William Booth, the pawnbroker, became the pawnbroker of the world, and his thrift shops are nothing more than a modified pawnbroking under the false flag of Christianity. So this is about individual self-enrichment, self-aggrandizement, building their wealth, using these people who were easily manipulated because they had nothing else. So if you fed them money to these organizations and they gave out food and soap and a place to stay for the night, then all of a sudden you had possible willing invaders for British settlement.
Okay, let's take the router boxes that the various states don't want to give up, these Dominion SGO Smartmatic router boxes. This is nothing more than a continuation of this agenda, because what we see here is that the British Empire pulled out all of the stops that they had in their organ to create this New World Order vision that would be based on corporatism. And what we see in the current time is the election interference in our elections by the British. It's not the Chinese. It's not the Russians. It's the British, because they're carrying out this agenda because they want their colony across the sea, America, to be subdued so that they can fulfill this poster from 1890. And I'm real sure this is the case. There's another aspect of this poster related to China, in that if you'll recall, after the Great Cultural Revolution, remember, he sent many of his citizens, including his professionals, out into the country to work on farms. Well, if you look at this poster, that's exactly what they called for. They called for the members of the Salvation Army to pull these people off the streets, first to get them set up in different institutions in the city, and then move them off into the farm colony. And then from the farm colony, there was not a movement back to the city. The only movement after the farm colony was to send them overseas. And I think what we saw in the Chinese Cultural Revolution was an implementation of this poster by the British against their former colony, China. And what is established since then have been institutions in China that are helping the British carry out this policy. And of course, election rigging is one of the key elements of this policy. So I think they believe they own us already, and they don't have to follow our laws. And so therefore, they're now denying us access to our own election information. So they're telling us, we have already hijacked your election, enjoy it. And I think the rest of us who never got that memo are saying, wait a second, bud.
Dominion is a Canadian company, slash, that makes it a Commonwealth nation. It's British. Dominion was really controlled by SGO Smartmatic, which is British, and that's Mark Malik Brown. And Mark Malik Brown and Jeffrey Patty brag about the over 100 different elections that they have rigged and the way that they use their propaganda to manipulate elections.
We need to add Kamala Harris's handler, Sir Nigel Knowles, into that list too.
That's right. And then Seidel is the one who manipulated the data, and that's the reason they can't let the routers be looked at, because they would find out that they are the exact IP addresses that Mike and the miners found and sent to all the people who were fighting this. It is very clear that that was information was sent out of the country and sent back, and that's the reason that you see the manipulated numbers on the screen, and the reason they halted the election statistics in the in the wee hours of the night, and then of course it was manipulated by the morning. So again, you have Mark Malik Brown being rewarded by George Soros, one of the other top manipulators of elections throughout the world, and particularly here in America. $18 billion he gave to non-government organizations, almost all of them to fight Trump and MAGA and the anti-globalists. So here again, Paragon Group Limited is really the controlling group for Seidel, and it has some of its headquarters in London and in Ireland and certainly in England. And so again, we have the British here doing this. And of course, George Soros and his Open Society is an attempt to destroy all nations for globalism. And who was the number one globalist that started all this election rigging? Mark Malik Brown, when he was the second in charge of the United Nations in Venezuela. He developed OpTec, the software that controls all the elections. They know this now. They know there's been a manipulation. They know that the information for the elections was sent overseas and then manipulated and sent back. They know the machines were all rigged, that they can be hacked by a junior high school student in literally 2 minutes. I'm not exaggerating. And so it's the same story. It's the same story. Basically, we are unwanted populations that are getting in the way of the elitists. And the elitists have their home in the city of London, which is not really part of London, or really part of Britain. It is a separate organization that controls the major banking of the world and controls this imperialistic movement of corporate interest, private individuals, corporate interests, flying under the flag of philanthropy in many cases, creating these organizations that take advantage of these populations that they needed to go to war, whether it be in Cecil Rhodes' Transvaal or whether it be anywhere that they want, basically, anywhere that they need to get a foothold on a nation that they're trying to settle. And the point with the farm is,
right,
the people who went to William Booth's The Farm, which was in England, they didn't get 5 acres. They didn't get a cow. And where did all those people go? Seeing that he listed hundreds of thousands of people that they were targeting in their army and in their attacks. And they refer to all of it in military terms. Okay. They are not Christian.
Let me respond to that, because in this poster, you will see flowchart lines emanating from the farm colony out to the British colonies overseas, foreign lands, and to the colony across the sea. And we see little ships, sailing vessels, multiple seaworthy craft going back and forth, connecting between all of these overseas locations and their farm colony, their city colony, and then their cesspool in London. Now, the only difference between that thinking then and now is the fact that those dotted lines that are going overseas are now internet cables and satellite cables. But in fact, this is showing the British vision for how they were not only going to control the world, but how they were going to staff the world. And they weren't going to staff it with their previous plantation slaves. They were going to staff it with properly trained white, not only white, but also because the YMCA, the Salvation Army are worldwide. So therefore, they were going to staff it with black, brown, yellow, and white slaves. And they were going to create false conflict between the groups that they were abusing in order to keep the attention off of their attempt to enslave us all, so that they could carry out this two-tiered view of the world, which came out of the settlement movement, as you've pointed out, where you'd have an autocrat running the community, and you had everybody else following the rules of the autocrat. That was their vision. It was the old Lord of the Manor vision that Cecil Rhodes and all the British aristocrats loved so well. And so therefore, we see here that, as we've said, these people aren't that creative. So when W.T. Stead put this picture together, he knew he was, in fact, there is wording in the book that they knew they were creating something for the generations, for their ancestors. He knew that then, and nothing has changed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And the propaganda is amazing. For instance, going from the farm in England out to the settlements in all these different places, which they depict as a beautiful place. As a matter of fact, some of the pictures of the skyline in that city that they're being sent to indicate to me exactly where they're going. Those look like mosques. Those are prayer towers. Those some of them, they look like mosques. And so, yes, here's where they went, because I just spent quite a bit of time looking to find a single settlement colony for the Salvation Army, not one. So if they're training them at the farm and then they're sending them out in boatloads, why wouldn't there be settlements? Why wouldn't they be bragging about their settlements? They don't say one word about all the displaced people, all the indigents that they've displaced, the unwanted populations. Here's the equation. Salvation Army farmers equal slaves.
Right.
Period. And or they just killed them. They disappeared. They got on the boat. They went supposedly somewhere and they disappeared. As a matter of fact, the only people that you see that you can track a record of is when they sent a number of their top officers to Philadelphia. And there they convinced Jane Addams to become basically the international spokesperson for the Salvation Army, because she had settlement houses and she tried to help the poor and she was very real. That's the only good person in the whole Salvation Army that you can name. So if they've been helping so many people and getting billions of dollars a year to help them, why don't we see any evidence of that? I can't find a single place that they show that they've helped these people, these poor people, or all the people that they considered were sinning, that they landed somewhere and they started a farm or they had even one cow. Not one cow can I find, not one single 5-acre acreage for one of the people that they promised this to. But we do know that they sent people out in droves, in masses. It's unbelievable that no one has ever asked, where did they go? What did they do? And so what you have here is a fantastic propaganda organization that is just like Planned Parenthood, which is not Planned Parenthood. It's called Planned Abortions. And Margaret Sanger, she was a eugenicist. She was an she was a depopulationist. And who was the person who was first on her board who started giving a lot of money and getting all the donations? That would be Bill Gates Sr. So you have the richest people in the world promoting depopulation in front of our eyes. In America, 65 million have died at the hands of abortions. And most of those came through Planned Parenthood, as I say, which should be called Planned Abortionhood. And it's always the rich people who donate, because unfortunately, you get a group of rich people together and they all come out preaching eugenicism. We have to kill people. We have to depopulate in any way we can, not only by stopping births and abortions, but by literally going out. And as this case shows, where are the people the Salvation Army got put on the boats and sent to get their 5 acres and a cow? You won't find a one of them.
Well, I will point out that within 10 years of this poster, the British had they were into their second Boer War. And as you mentioned, Milner and Lord Roberts were setting up concentration camps to get rid of the Boers, to actually murder the Boers and to do welcome tests, vaccine tests on the Boers. So that mentality was clearly there. Those are the people that saw this, that supported this, and then pushed it forward, because within several years, even Queen Victoria is approving this British South Africa company, this colony across the sea. So this is very real.
Oh, it's quite
not just
so.
Just a picture.
Go ahead, folks. Do your research. You're going to find out everything we're saying is true. And all I can say is this is the same old story. The same old story from the early 1800s until today. British imperialism, or people who believe that they're imperialistic, that they are higher, that they're the elite, that they are the rich elite, believe that the majority of the people, a good 6 billion, need to be killed as soon as they possibly can. And now the pharmaceutical companies have taken that up and they're doing a little better job, but they're so very disappointed to find out that people who have HIV/AIDS now live a normal life expectancy. they don't actually die from it. So they're invented illnesses, which are man-made, laboratory-made illnesses, including what we're going through right now, is part of the plan. And unfortunately, if you aren't one of these billionaires, then you are not going to be on the list. And when they put you on the boat, whether it's to go get your shot or to help you with Planned Parenthooding or anything else that you want, elections, whatever, whatever you think you're free in or whatever you think that you actually have a chance to do something good, you better watch out, because the Salvation Army says that anybody who's a sinner, it is better that they be killed than they be allowed to continue in their sin.